today, as Rosh Kavah mentioned, we're going to discuss the Dead Sea Scrolls versus Chazal. It's one of the unfortunate things is that the Dead Sea Scrolls, which are one of the most fascinating archaeological discoveries ever, are known in the world to be things that contain stuff of Christianity and nothing about Yiddishkeit. Very little has been done research in Yiddishkeit direction, and in the last few years, even less as time goes on. So we're going to take a look at the Gemara and see references that we have and talk about the Dead Sea Scrolls and how the two relate. So just a little introduction about the Dead Sea Scrolls themselves. In Eretz Yisrael, as opposed to other countries, not much written material has survived. In countries like Mesopotamia, they used to inscribe into clay and store it in the storeroom, and if the enemy came and captured the king's palace and burned it down, the tablets hardened by the fire and remained for the ages. In places like in Egypt, they used to write on papyrus and later on parchment. Egypt's a very dry climate. It's very seldom, rain is very rare. And since it's a dry climate, everything survives. And therefore, we have written papyrus from Egypt from a couple thousand years ago, clearly legible, very easy to read. Once hieroglyphics were deciphered, we know what it's all about. And Eretz Yisrael, on the contrary, they wrote on papyrus and parchment, but the climate is a wet climate and it rains in the winter, and therefore no written material has really survived, and any written material that we have, the small amount of written material we have from the first base of Megiddush and from the second base of Megiddush is usually stuff that's written on clay pottery and clay charas or engraved into stone, which of course is a very small percentage of what was. In 1947, a known story, which is true, of a shepherd who was wandering in the Judean desert, and he lost a sheep. And he saw a cave from far away and decided to figure out, are his sheep in there or not? So instead of having to trek the whole way, he took a stone and he threw it into the cave, and figured if the sheep are in there, then they'll run out. And instead of the sheep running out, he heard kind of a strange thud. And he came to the he came into the cave and he saw a bunch of jars. And in one of the jars, he found these things wrapped up in linen cloth. And he took a couple of them, he brought them to his uncle, and the uncle said, looked at them and says, yeah, we can make good money off of this. And he takes it to Beit Lechem, where there was a shepherd, a shoemaker. And he asked him if he can use these to make shoes. So the shoemaker said, sure, and paid him some money for it, probably some British pounds, and or Israel lira at the time, and the guy started making shoes out of it. It took a little while until they finally discovered what was going on here. These were the oldest written material, pretty much from the days of the second Beis HaMikdash, and not even from the end of the second Beis HaMikdash, probably from 100 years, at least 100 to 150 years before the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. Before we get to what the content of the scrolls were, just to continue with the story, this was exactly in November 1947 when, the State of Israel, well, the whole issue of partition was voted on in the United Nations, and after partition was accepted, the War of Independence began shortly after. The scrolls being in Beit Lechem, the scientist Professor Sukenik, who realized the importance of the scrolls sitting in Yerushalayim, but no way really to travel between the two. The scrolls were smuggled out to New York, and from there Professor Sukenik went on a whole hunt to find them and buy them and purchase them, and they are in the Shrine of the Book in the Israel Museum today. When the Bedouins realized the treasure that they have, and they started looking for more stuff, and started searching for more caves all around, and kept on finding scrolls in more caves all around. As a total, we can say that 850 scrolls and parts of scrolls were found, although some of those were found cut up into pieces, some by the Bedouins who used to, well, paid by the piece, and they used to take the scrolls and cut them up into more pieces to get more money. And when they finally put together, we're talking about 850 scrolls and parts of scrolls that were found. What was in these scrolls? So if we'll start with the first seven. The first seven, as I mentioned, were found in a clay jar in that cave. We know from Sefer Yirmiyahu, when it's out in Bechlicheres, Leman yamdu yamim rabin. If you want something to stay for a long time, you store it away in a kli cheres. And indeed, those were in the best condition of them, of the artifacts that were found there. There is an entire Sefer Yeshayahu from beginning to end. But not only Sefer Kodesh. All told, they found Sefer Kodesh and parts of Sefer Kodesh from every Sefer Tanakh except from Megillas Esther. And they also found a bunch of other stuff also. One of the scrolls, for example, that was found, that was called Peshach Habakkuk, where it analyzes Sefer Habakkuk. It takes Sefer Habakkuk and says, quote, this is what Habakkuk said, and now this is exactly what it's referring to. And it probably was referring to, the person who wrote this was referring to something that happened in his days. Another interesting scroll that was found is known as Serach HaYachad, which is Serach HaYachad, which is an instruction of how the community will live together. This is a very interesting thing because, as we'll get to in the end, we'll see there are different groups around in those days, and trying to figure out which is the group that really wrote these scrolls, that came to usage. Okay, when the scrolls were found, for the last 50, 60 years till we were actually properly published, rumors started flying around that here the origins of Christianity are here, and as I mentioned in the opening statement, everyone, the whole world knows that these are Christian things. Truth of the matter is, the stuff, as I said, predated Christianity, and there's no basis whatsoever to connect it to Christianity, but there's a lot of stuff that we have to learn from. Mentioned in the Gemara. Now, we have to remember, not everything, this library in the time of Chazal probably would have been banished because of the stuff that's in it. But if Chazal talk about banishing certain things, then they obviously existed in those days. So this would have been a negative thing maybe to learn from this library. An interesting thing is that nearby, near these caves, is a site known as Qumran, an archaeological site. And the French archaeologists under the auspices of the Jordanian government went to excavate the site because he wanted to see, is this the site where they actually wrote the scrolls? So he excavated the site known as Qumran, and he already came with the pre-notion that we're talking about a group called the Essenes. The Essenes, we know about the Perushim and the Tzedukim, which we'll talk about, but the Essenes are a group that appears only in Josephus, the historian for that time. It's like a communal group that lives together, they share their bread and whatever, and he came to, before he excavated, he wanted to know if they wrote the scrolls there or not. He felt that if the site is an Essene site, and then clearly the site is connected to the scrolls. Going with that, he excavated the site and came to the conclusion that the site fits the description of the Essenes. And ever since then, the scientific world accepts that it's the Essenes who wrote the scrolls. In recent years, though, a lot of people have been questioning these conclusions of DeVoe. And one of the things is, there's no real way from excavations to tell if this was a poor site or a rich site. There's nothing really there that can show that it's an extraordinary poor or rich site. There's no way of knowing. Some say it's just a fortress, or perhaps it was a small farm of people who grew stuff over there using the warm climate to grow stuff. People kind of question the connection to the Essenes. But what's important to note is that one of the caves, cave number 4, is sitting right underneath the cliff of Qumran. It's pretty hard to detach the two. It's clear that the people from Qumran used cave number 4 to store the stuff. One possibility is that the stuff in cave number 4 was indeed used by the people in Qumran, while the stuff in cave number 1, which is pretty far away, I'm talking about 1 kilometer away from the site, and high up on the cliff and stored in jars, it could be that was a Seamus, and that they stored away because they felt that we're not supposed to use, and that's why it was put away in a different section. Why would a Sefer Sheol be put in Seamus? Well, the Sefer Sheol that was found and is on display today in the shrine of the book is not exactly the text the way we have it today. There are some discrepancies, and there are extra vavim and stuff like that, some differences. At the time, people, the Bible critics took this Sefer Sheol at first and looked at it, and they said, wow, you know, this is an early version, we have a later version, so let's see what the early version says. Professor Kutcher basically researched it and proved just the opposite. The version we have is the early version, and this was a later version that was corrected by someone, and that could be the reason why it was put in Seamus. All told, Professor Emmanuel Tov from the university, who's not religious, who until a few years ago was in charge of publishing the scrolls, says clearly there's no doubt that the Tanakh that we have today is the same Tanakh that they had 2,000 years ago. Of course, there are small mistakes or discrepancies here and there, but as a whole, it hasn't changed over 2,000 years, which is kind of a fascinating thing, the Jewish continuity. Until then, the earliest thing we had was the Masorah, which dates back maybe to the Middle Ages or maybe earlier, but nothing that far to the days of the Second Bais HaMikdash, and we see that in 2,000 years, it has not changed. Interestingly, all the Bible critics or whatever who want to knock the Tanakh, they all have to make they can only date it as late as possible as the end of the Second Bais HaMikdash. So we not found the Dead Sea Scrolls. They probably would have dated it 500-600 years later. But now they dated to the Second Bais HaMikdash, but they try always to date as late as possible. Okay, back to our Gemara. The Gemara talks about Kisva Kodesh Mitzin or something that Leiko Kufta Svev Amin Aleph Bein She Koran Ben Bein She En Koran Ben Rahu Bishik Suva Mechol Lashon. So we have the whole discussion in Gemara Koran Ben what you don't read Koran Ben Nevim, which we read after Torah, you don't read Suvim and Bein She Suvim Mechol Lashon. So let's remember, what are Kisvei HaKodesh? Kisvei HaKodesh, as Rashi says, they are all 24 Sfarim of Tanakh. In those days, before the Mishnah was written, all people had what 24 Sfarim of Tanakh. You were not allowed to write any other stuff of the Torah because it is Dvarim Shebichsav, and Dvarim Shebaalpeh, and Dvarim Shebaalpeh, you're not allowed to write down the Chsav. So you cannot write down any Chidushim. Everything's got to be done Baalpeh. The only thing you're allowed to write are the 24 Sefer Tanakh. The Mishnah in Sanhedrin, Daf Tzadik Amud Aleph, and that's on our Hebrew source page, source 2.1, mentions Ve'elu she'enu m'chelkom ha'mabo. These are the people who don't have m'chelkom ha'mabo. Rabbi Kiva Omar Fakore b'svar machitzonim. Rabbi Kiva says a person who reads svar machitzonim also does not have m'chelkom ha'mabo. So what are svar machitzonim? Rashi says Sifra Tzedukim. The Gemara continues. Time of Sifra Tzedukim. The Gemara says so. Have you asked about Sefer Ben Tzir and Nami Yosef Lemekir? You also now allowed to read Sefer Ben Tzir. So there's 24 Sefer Tanakh and no more. And the Tanakh basically is sealed off at the time that there's no more Ruach HaKodesh in Klal Yisrael. At the beginning of the Second Bais HaMikdash, the latest Sfarim, Ezra, Megillas Esther, Divrei Hayamim, which end all in the Persian period, and that's the period when Nevuah actually ends. So the Anshei Knesset Gedolah are probably the ones who sealed the Tanakh, who finished it off, and nothing can be added later. Sefer Ben Tzira is an example of a Sefer that's borderline. What do we mean borderline? I have caught over here, source number 2.3, we have a Gemara in Bava Kamma, where the Gemara asks a question, how do you know a certain thing? So the Gemara says, Dabas HaKosa B'Torah, it says in the Torah, V'shani B'Nevi'im, and it's repeated in Nevi'im, V'mashulash B'Ksuvim, and it's the third time in the Ksuvim. And then when it comes to bring a Pasuk from the Ksuvim, it brings a Pasuk to say what it says, Kol Of Lemino Yishkon, Uvnei Adam Ledom Elo. This Pasuk, Rashi, Tosfos already points out over there, just is not around in Tanakh, so where did it come from? So Tosa says, V'shema, maybe it came from Sefer Ben Tzira. Tosa evidently did not have Sefer Ben Tzira. Today we have Sefer Ben Tzira. Ben Tzira was, by the way, held on to by the Christians, and in the Cairo Gniza, a copy of Ben Tzira was found, and in the Dead Sea Scrolls, a copy of Sefer Ben Tzira was found from the Second Bais HaMikdash. It seemed to match pretty perfectly. And indeed, that pasuk call of Kanaf Lamina Yishkan of Ben Adam Ledomelo. Pretty fair. So the Gemara calls something on Sefer Ben Tzira, the Gemara calls it Ksuvim. So that's very interesting. Furthermore, the Gemara in Sanhedrin over there in Kufam and Beis says, when the Gemara says, you're not allowed to read Sefer Ben Tzira, the Gemara says, Mili Ma'ali said, the Isbe Darshinan, the good things, you're allowed to be Dorish. In other words, the Sefer is pretty borderline. There's some stuff over there you should not read, but there's some stuff that you're allowed to be Dorish. And we see the Chazal occasionally bring quotes from Sefer Ben Tzira. But other than that, you're not allowed to add to the 24 Sfarim. Very interesting medrash. Divrei Chacham kedavanos u'chamasmeros netuim. The words of Chacham are like masmeros. And we add in the Gemara and Shabbos, that you're not allowed to go out with a sandal on Masumah b'Shabbos. You're not allowed to go with a sandal that has nails on it. And then you have the Shaila in the Gemara. How many nails are you allowed to? It's the minimum. And one of the Amar says 24. And then from there, the Pasuk says, V'yoseh me'hema b'ni hizar. You should be careful not to do anything more. Aso sfarim habe. Not to do any more sfarim. Meaning 24 is the limit. You should not have any more sfarim. I once asked if Shlomo Fischer Shlita a very interesting question. I said, is there an issue today, for example, to read the book of the Maccabees? Because if that's that falls into the category of Shlomo Chitzonim, the Gemara says that a person who reads Shlomo Chitzonim, he'll have no Abba. So, the Gemara talks about a Sefer Tzedukim. It could very well be that it's a Sfar among the Christians. And indeed, the Christians incorporated the book of the Maccabees into their Bible, etc. So I asked if you're allowed to. So he heard the question, and pretty typical of him, he laughed at me. Not typical that he laughed at me, but typical was his response. He says, you have to understand, in those days all the war were 24 swarm. Anything out of the 24 swarm was absolutely forbidden. He says, but today when people read so much nonsense in the world, so what? So Sefer Maccabees, you're not allowed to read everything, all other nonsense you're allowed to read. Why is that any worse? So that was just saying today, of course, it's not something specific on the Svarim Chitzonim that Chacham spoke about then. Indeed, there's no doubt that in the Dead Sea, among the Dead Sea Scrolls, are plenty of Svarim which Chazal would have labeled as Svarim Chitzonim, which Chazal forbade to read. Another very interesting, a couple of interesting things that were found. Look at source number 3:1 from Kuftes Vav Amud Aleph. It mentions Amabius. My sebab chalafta shalchas am gemil brevli tveria. A mitzvah shayesh v'shachon shavriachem benizov. A biyada sefer iyo of targum. Fukar Rabbi, he says, I remember that I went to Rav Gamliel went to that Rav Abba Chalafta went to Rav Gamliel to Tveria, and he saw that he was reading sefer iyo of targum. Amalo, he told him, Zachor ni Rav Gamliel avi avichom shayven v'gabim ala ba'abayis. Revealed for him sefer iyo of targum, and he told him to bury it. And then he found they were building an abayis, and he held a sefer iyo of targum, and he told him to bury it. What's very interesting is that almost all the Dead Sea Scrolls are found are in Lashon Kodesh. A couple of them are in Targum. One of them is part of Vayikra Targum. Now, it's in Aramaic, but it's not the Targum we have today, because, as I said, we're talking about 100, 150 years before the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, while the Unculus Targum is a later Targum. Unculus is Achilles Hager, he's the Talmud of Lezer and Beshua, he's in the days of Hadrian, so we're talking about 200 years later. So it's not the same Targum. Now, Aramaic had different dialects and different, and also there are additions in the Targum. So Unculus put in his additions, of course, Mishnah, but there could be other Targums that are not legit, that didn't not written Baruch HaKodesh, and they put in theirs. Anyway, we have a fragment, I should say, a small section of Targum from Vayikra. The second Targum, and that's the only, again, the only Targum that appears, is part of a Megillah of Targum Eof. Two parts of Targum Eov were found also in one of the caves far away from the site of Qumran, which again could mean that these things are buried there as a Knesset, just like the Gemara says over here. Just because it was there doesn't mean it was read, and if it was read, doesn't mean that it was the right thing to do. Just like we see over here, you have, say, for Targum Eov, which gets mentioned over here, at least with two copies over here, we see that it was a common thing. Maybe the reason why specifically Eov, it could be that the Lashon of Eov was a little difficult to understand, and therefore they had it was translated into a language which they were familiar with Aramaic. So that's one of the scrolls that was found there. Be'ezrat Hashem, in the future, we'll post a list of websites which have a lot of information about the Sea Scrolls and the inventory of what was found in what caves. That's also important. To date, no one has really put an emphasis on what was found in which cave, and that was to try to classify the stuff based on the cave where the things were found. But this, again, I told you was found, if I remember correctly, in Cave 11, and that's far away, it's about a kilometer away from the site in Qumran, which again could mean that that was done by, that was Genesha. Another Megillah which we spoke about, we mentioned Pesach Habakkuk, which is explaining the meaning of Navi Habakkuk based on the current events that they had in those days. So this is interesting, because we have the Gemara Gidin Daf Samach, and likewise the Gemara Tumor Yudalid, both on the Hebrew source page 1.1, 1.2. It mentions a concept of Sefer Haftarah. Sefer HaFtoros, which means, which today also became common in recent years. Instead of having a complete Navi, they have a Sefer that has all the HaFtoros in them, and just the HaFtoros. And the Gemara says, Lo Nitan LiKosev, you're not allowed to write that, Gemara Gittin Samach Amud Aleph, because you're not allowed to write less than an entire Sefer. And then Rabbi Avashi says it's even muktzah, you're not allowed to read it. The Gemara says you're allowed to read it, and you're allowed to be mitzalto. The Rabbi Yochanan v'shlokish ma'ayni b'sifra d'agadat v'shapsa. Rabbi Yochanan v'shlokish would look into Sefer HaGadah on Shabbos. V'lar adam mikosev. How could they do that? You're not allowed to write the stuff. The answer is, given the life of Shaisos was Hashem HaPerah Torah, since it's a sakana, as the Gemara also says in Temura, mutav tarka tarah v'tashtek tarah m'yisrael. In other words, if you will be matter the issue of writing down Torah Shabbat Peh in order to prevent the Torah from being forgotten from Klai Yisrael. So you see, Rabbi Yochanan Shlokish read Sefer Agoda. Sefer Agoda, as I mentioned, one especially Habakkuk could be. Another very interesting Sefer Agoda that was found in that first cave was Sefer Agoda's Bereshis, a whole medrash on Chumash Bereshis. Also very interesting. And again, these were things in the days of Chazal were a big no-no, and you were not allowed to read. Today, of course, we have Midrashim and everything printed, because again, the concept of Beis of Hashem refers to Hashem. Another thing we have on Kuf Tes Vav Amud Beis, when the Gemara discusses the status of Bai Menei Reish Gulusa Ma'ab Avuna, Hayuk Suvim B'Sam V'Sikra V'Kumas V'Kankantom. Are you allowed to, if they're written not with ink, but they're written with all other types of writing materials, among them sikra, which is a red, form of ink. And the conclusion of the Gemara is that it depends if you're allowed to write Kisvei Kodesh in these with these materials or not. And it brings to the Mishnah Megillah. Emes from Megillah, Shastron from Choloshon. Sfarim can be written in any language. And Megillah, Shek Suv Ashuris, and the Sefer Badiyo. Megillah has got to be written with Ksav Ashuri, which is the Ksav we have today. Ala Sefer, Ubadiyo, and with ink. Mashma, that any other Kisvei Kodesh can be written with other writing materials, including Sikra. What's interesting is that in the Dead Sea Scrolls, there are a few scrolls that do have parts written with Sikra. They're written with the red ink, usually at the end of a line or at the end of a paragraph. Again, most of the stuff, just to mention, the stuff is just, a lot of the stuff, it took 50 years to be published. It was found in 47, the complete publication. It's not even complete now, but fairly, we can say, close to complete publication. It's just been done in the last couple of years. The stuff takes 40 volumes of what's known as DJD, which means Discoveries of the Judean Desert. 40 big volumes to go through the material is not an easy task, and that's got to be done in one day. So why the stuff was used in Sikra, etc. Okay, well, the question will have to wait. But the fact is, the Mishnah talks about writing with Sikra in a couple places, in Gittin, etc., and we see that this was a practice, and for some reason over there they also wrote part of the stuff written with Sikra. Another thing which we have back to Kuftas Rav Amanalov, you have if the stuff is written Giptis, Mardis, Ivris, Ilmis, Ivanis, if it's written in different scripts, Mardis, Ivris. One of them is Ivris. What is Ivri? Rashi says Ksav Shalaybar Hanar. We also have in Ksav Shalaybar Hanar. We also have in the Mishnah Yadayim, Source 8:1, it says like this. It's underlined. If you wrote b'chsav ivri, then it's not matamah shedaim. Matamah shedaim, we'll get to in a moment, is in the first parak in Shabbos, a couple of months back. And it says b'chsav ivri, if the sefer Torah is written b'chsav ivri, it's not matamah shedaim. So let's go back a little in history. In the first place, HaMikdash, they used to write stuff b'chsav ivri. They wrote b'chsav ivri, which is the ancient Hebrew script. In the second Beis HaMikdash, when Ezra came, he switched it to Ashuri. He switched it to Ksav Ashuri. Now, let's not get confused. The Assyrians originally did not write in that language, in that script. the Assyrians wrote a script called cuneiform. But there was an Aramaic script which was adopted by the Assyrians at the beginning of the second Beis HaMikdash, and Bnei Yisrael adopted that too. And that's done by, that was done in the days of Ezra. Ezra accepted the Baruch HaKodesh. He changed it to Ksav Ashuri. It's been Ksav Ashuri ever since. But it seems that this was a gradual change. It's not a thing that happened overnight. And to the end of the second Beis HaMikdash, the coins that are minted by the Jews are still have Ksav Ivri on them, not Ksav Ashuri. And probably important documents and stuff like that. What's interesting is that in the Dead Sea Scrolls, almost all of them are written by Ksav Ashuri, like we have today. There's one Chumash Vayikra over there that everything is written in Ksav Ashuri, except for one thing. When it comes to Hashem's name, the Hashem's name appears in Ksav Ivri. Evidently, the change of Hashem's name was something that they didn't want to do, and they held on to it as much as possible. And this is probably an earlier, one of the earlier scrolls. And as I said, the Hashem's name is written with Ksav Ivri. So we see again, if the Mishnah has to tell us about it, Ksav Ivri, any time I say a dime, that this again was a practice. And as we see, the archaeological evidence which supports this. Since we spoke about Tumas Ha'adayim, so let's go to the Gemara in Shabbos Yedal Raman Aleph. We have in the Hebrew source page 6.1. The Gemara says like this. First of all, the Gemara is talking about the Halachos Shamru, the Mishnah, and Yud Gimel Amud Beis. Relevant Halachos Shamru, Balias Chananya ben Chizkiah ben Gorin, Shaul Levaku, Rabbi B'Shamim B'Sil, Yitchas Dov, Gozer Rabbi Yed. We're talking about the days of an Aliyah, an attic of Chananya ben Chizkiah ben Gorin. It mentions that there are 18 things that Beis Shammai defeated Beis Hillel and the Machlokas. So the Gemara mentions later on that this Hanani ben Chizkiah, if not for him, Chachamim would have been Gonei Sefer Cheskel. They would have taken Sefer Cheskel and also put it aside. Why? Because there were things in it there were things in it that seemed to contradict what it says in the Torah. And Chachamim were afraid if people would read this, they would get the wrong idea. Hanani ben Chizkiah sat and worked things out and showed that the things in Cheskel do not contradict the Torah. Then it goes on and mentions the things, the Yud Ches Dov, the 18 things, that they were gozer. And one of the things they were gozer was that the sefer is matame truma. If a person touches a sefer or truma comes in contact with a sefer, so then it becomes tummy. Why did the Chachamim do such a strange thing to decide that a sefer, a kisvei kodesh, can become is tummy? So the Gemara tells a story, and that's a nafidal and amud aleph. The Gemara says, the people had truma, and truma, of course, has got to be treated with tahara, and people need a safe place to store it. So they looked around, and they saw the safest places where the Sefer Torah is kept. The Sefer Torah has also got to be kept as kodesh, and they kept the truma next to the Sefer Torah. What happened as a result? The mice started coming and eating away at the truma, and at the time they would also eat away at the Sefer Torah. So then Chachamim decided and declared that the Sefer Torah is tameh, and therefore you cannot put it together with the truma. Then the Gemara goes on and says another thing. After dying, my boys, Mechamah, Sefer poses as a truma. The hands which touch the Sefer are also passed the truma because of Rabbi Parnach, because Rabbi Parnach said that a person who is Oche Sefer Torah or Mikva Aram, a person who touches the Sefer Torah, directly, then he loses the schar of the mitzvah that he did. And also says that it's not only, Sefer Torah, but it's all Kisvei Kodesh. This thing is a Machlokas, a Ramah, the other one is saying not like Tosfos, although the Rama says that the Chachilia should be Machna. Today, places they learn from Nevi'im, we're not Machbid on it, only Machbid on Sefer Torah. So that's the concept of Matama Sheredayim. This, again, is in the time of, Hananya ben Chizkiah in the days of Beshama Beis Hillel. At the time, it's around the time when Hordas becomes king. So we have an issue of touching a Sefer Torah. The question is the issue of touching the Sefer Torah, is it like a result of because it's Matama Sayadayim, or is it not dependent on that Issa being Matama Sayadayim? And then, of course, Tosu seems to be saying that it is. He's saying, because Tosu brings a proof that all Kisvei Kodesh are Matama Sayadayim. And likewise, you're not allowed to touch the Sefer Torah. So Tosu seems to be saying that the two aren't connected. It's a big machlokas in the poskim, exactly how to define it. One interesting thing that we have is that the Gemara says in Bava Basra. The Gemara says in Bava Basra in the first parak, and this is source number 6-3, Kol Asfarim Reglol Mikhlas on the Sofa. All the Sfarim are rolled from the middle, from Mikhlas on the Sofa. Meaning what? They're rolled in one round thing. When you open it up, you're at the beginning, and the end is in the inside. The Sefer Torah Niglal Emtsisa. But the Sefer Torah, on the other hand, we have like today two Atzichayim. And it's rolled, and it's rolled to the middle, meaning, you know, you half on one, it's chaim, half on the other, and it's rolled to the middle. Amar Blazor Tzadok, Kacha Yukos V'Svarim Shem Shalayim Osim Sifrayim. That's how the people in Shalayim did, probably to all the Svarim. But then the Gemara said that the Sefer Azara Litzchilos HaNiglal, the Sefer Azara had an exception. It was an exception. The Sefer Azara only had one, was Niglal Litzchilos, meaning it was like the Ksuvim, it was all in one circle, not like two, like we have in our Sefer Torah. Why is the Sefer of the Azara different than all the other Sfar? Why was the Sefer Azara only have one Amud in the end, as opposed to all Sefer Torah that have two? So, I haven't seen anyone that discusses this, but my theory is because the Mishnah says in Kalim, Perkdus Rav Mishnah Bav, Kol Asfar Matamas Hardayim Chutz Misefer Azara, that all the Sfar Matamas Hardayim except the one that was in the Azara. So the purpose of the Yetz Chaim is that you shouldn't touch the Sefer because it's Matamas Hardayim, but the Sefer Azara is anyway not Matamas Hardayim, and therefore there's no issue of touching it. So if this theory is true, so then it's clear that the reason why you cannot touch the Sefer Torah is indeed because it's Matamas Hardayim. Again, the whole thing is a machlokes apaskim, but that's the two seem to be connected. We mentioned a few things. Now we'll try to piece and put together the story. We mentioned the concept of the Essenes. The Essenes were a group which Josephus describes in major detail. He has lots of admiration for these people. These people do not value any materialistic issues. They live a spiritual life. They don't have too much money, and they share whatever they have with all other people. They are very pure. They go to the mikvah, etc., and they will not let anyone touch their bread if he is not as pure as they are. And when someone joins them, their cult or their group, they give them a trial period before they even let them touch any of the bread, etc. Now, this one scroll, which was found in the original seven scrolls, known as Sarah Chayachan, seems to have instructions which match what Josephus talks about on the Essenes. Essenes do not appear anywhere in Chazal. Now, some want to say the Beit Osin, maybe Beit Sin, whatever, but there's no real direct mention. We have the Prushim, we have the Sdukim, and they appear in Chazal in numerous times. And another group which we have from the 8th century and on is the Karoim. The Karoim, who only believe in Mikra, and they began with Anan ben David in Babel, who, when he lost the election to become the Goyim, the leader, so he started his own sect, and they only believe in Torah Shabbat and not in Torah Shabbat. And they're around to this very day. There are about 50,000 of them today, 25,000 in Eretz Yisrael, 25,000 in the Ukraine. There used to be a large group also in Egypt. Today they've moved to Eretz Yisrael. So you have the Karoim. Interestingly, the Rambam in Perash HaMishnayos, in Pirkei Avos, where it says, "I'm thinking she socho said, Al tiyu kavodim hamshamashim sarabim nasa kabo pras." We know that Talmidim or Tikkun Shishocho heard this statement, don't serve Hashem with the intention of getting reward, rather serve the Shalom Nasakal Pras. They came to the conclusion that he meant that there is no reward, there is no Olam Haba, and two Talmidim he had, Baitos and Tzadok, left and started the groups known as the Baitosim and the Tzadukim. The Rambam over there in the Perash HaMishnayos of Pirkei Avos says that the Karoim are continuity of these Tzadukim. Historians for many, many years had difficulty with this Rambam because they have yet, I shouldn't say they have yet, because now they do, but for many years there was no direct continuation. If the last we hear, the Tzedukim, are around in the second and the first century when the Beis Hamikdash is destroyed, and all of a sudden Hanan ben David comes along in the 8th century, so we're talking about 700 years where there's nothing in between, and the Rambam says that the Karam are a continuation of the Tzedukim. But as we'll see, there is, the Dead Sea Scroll actually supplies that link, that missing link between the Karam and the Tzedukim, and we'll see evidence, again, the Yisim don't appear in Chazal, but we'll see evidence that we are talking about a group of Tzedukim. Let me just say, before we come to any conclusions, the Dead Sea Scrolls are a major library, and walking into a library, it's very unfair to look at one or two books and decide you know the owner of the library based on one or two books that you have over there. A person can have it can be a library that was a public library for everyone, it can be a library that someone somehow got a handle of a collection or whatever, it was a collector's item. That's another issue that's also at debate. Is there any way of knowing what type of library this was? But some documents are fascinating documents, which are clearly Tzedukim documents. And we're going to refer to two of them, which basically give that missing link, and we'll show them versus what Chazal say, some fascinating stuff. The two documents which I mentioned, was a scroll known as the Temple Scroll, Megillat HaMikdash. This also has a story in itself. This guy from Beit Lechem by the name of Kando bought this scroll in the early 60s, and Beit Lechem was in Arab hands, and Kando decided to make a lot of money off of this. And of course, who's going to buy it if not the Jews who read this script, and it means a lot to them. So he sent someone across the border into Yerushalayim to meet with Yigal Yadin, the archaeologist, and he sent him a page of this scroll. He says, would you buy it? So he looks at it and he tries to actually conceal his amazement of what it was. And he says, well, how much does the guy want? He says, well, he wants $100,000. Yadin hears $100,000 is a lot of money, especially in those days, but you know, thinks about it, says, you know what, fine, bring it, we'll give you the money. For a year he doesn't hear the guy. A year later the guy comes back, you know, oh, you want to buy the scroll? Yeah, okay, where is it? Well, you know, he kind of raised the price, now it's $200,000. So Yadin thinks again and says, okay, but bring it already. And the next year the guy comes back and he wants $300,000. And by then, you know, by 67 the guy already wants $750,000, and the price is going up. Except there one mistake. In June 67, Israel captured the West Bank, including Beit Lechem, and in the middle of the war, the day after they captured Beit Lechem, Kando gets a knock at his door, and they say, okay, give it up or else. So he gave it, and in the end, they actually paid him, but they paid him the $100,000 that that he was offered originally, that he asked originally, for whatever reason. Yadin took this scroll, which is a fascinating scroll. It's the longest of the Dead Sea Scrolls. It's 8 meters long. It's known as Megillat HaMikdash because a lot of it has to do with the halachos of the Mikdash. But it's not just. There's a lot of other stuff in it too. Chumash Dvarim is written there with some discrepancies, whatever. Yadin was an archaeologist, definitely not a Talmud Chacham, but he really wanted to know things from the source. And he went to the United States and he spent a whole year with Professor Saul Lieberman to figure out what it says over there. And in the end, he published beautiful 3 volumes, unbelievable analysis of the of this Megillat HaMikdash. That's one document. And the second document, which is nothing near the size of Megillat HaMikdash, but the content of it was really enough to tell us that we are definitely talking over here about a Tzedukim group. Now, we know from Chazal there are plenty of discrepancies between, plenty of differences of opinion between the Purushim and the Tzedukim. This document is a document that was sent from maybe from Qumran, or maybe it was meant to be sent from Qumran, and it's a list of stuff that the writer complains that you people who this document is meant for are doing it wrong. We have it right, and you're doing it wrong. And among the stuff, there's some of the stuff that is clearly known to be Tzedukim versus Prushi confrontation. Let's quote a couple. V'af ataras parasachatos. The paradumo. Hashochitos. V'asorifos. V'osav v'sefer v'amazes mechatos. All these, the one who shechs the paraduma, the one who burns it, the one who gathers the ashes, and the one who sprinkles the water. L'kol eila l'harev shemesh liyos tahor. She'yeh tahor mazal atami. In other words, what's required is these people must be tahor. They must be morave shemesh, which means not only they told in the mikvah, but they waited until after the sun set before they can shech. So this is a major point of confrontation between the Purushim and the Tzedukim. We have the Gemara in Chagiga, source 9.1, and in numerous places in the Gemara, that Nan Mitamma Yokona service a paro. Loatsim and Libra Shabzokim, Sharam, Maru, Shemashers, and Hases. When they came to make the paraduma, they would take the Kohen and make him Tame, and send him to the mikvah, and check the paro before the sun comes, before the sun sets, so that everyone should know that this Kohen who did it, he was not more of Shemesh. Why? Because the Tzedukim say the guy has got to be more of Shemesh, so we're going to show you that that's not the case. So in other words, this was a major point of confrontation. We know that there was a Kohen Gadol who was a Tzeduki, and he tried getting away with it, and Rabbi Yochanan Mazakai made him mitovel. And we have three issues in Chazal with a Kohen who was a Tzeduki. One was the issue with the Nesach HaMayim, with Gemara Sukkah, that the guy, instead of pouring out his breath, poured out his feet. We have the Kohen who wasn't mocked to the Ketores. He put the Ketores on the fire outside and then walked into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, not like the Purushim said. And this is the third incident with the Paraduma. The Yishalmi discusses whether it's the same Kohen or not, or two different Kohanim, the three stories. But anyway, this is a major point of confrontation with the Purushim and the Tzedukim. And here we have this document over here, which clearly says the guy complains that the one who shechs the Parah has got to be more of Shemesh. So obviously this is a Tzeduki document. A couple of other things that we have over here, and if we go to the Mishnah Maseches Yadayim, we can see some fascinating things. The Mishnah Maseches Yadayim Perek Dalet has a whole bunch of fights, discussions, arguments between the Tzedukim and the Purushim. Let's look at source 8.2. Armim Tzedukim, Kovlim Anu Aleichem Purushim. We have it out with you, Purushim, Shatem Armim Kisvei Kodesh Matamos Yadayim. You say that Kisvei Kodesh are Tamei. The Sifrei Hamiras Enam Tamos Yadayim. The works of what's the name? Homer. The works of Homer, the Greek philosopher. The Greek philosopher Enam Tamos Yadayim. So the Kisvei Kodesh are Tamei, but the Greek works are not. Where's the logic? Homer B'Yochem Mezakei. V'chi Ein Lano Al Purushim Al Zub Levad. So Rabbi Yochanan Mazakai, who of course is a member of the Purushim, says, don't we have against the Purushim this only? The Purushim say that Atmos Chamar is Tahar, the bones of a donkey are Tahar, but Atmos Yochanan Kohen Gadol Tameim, and the bones of Yochanan Kohen Gadol, who later became a Tzeduki, so it's obviously not by coincidence that he's using the name Yochanan Kohen Gadol as Tamei. So in other words, if you feel that Tamei should be for someone degraded, how come the bones of Chamar are Tahar, and the bones of Atzim Yochanan Kohen Gadol Tamei? So they answered him, Lefi Chibas, Tamei Tumasan. The reason why something is Tamei is that a person shouldn't use it for his personal use. And so they said the same thing with Kisrei Kodesh likewise. So what do we have over here? First of all, we have the Tzedukim of Anat Moda, the Kisrei Kodesh, Shem Tamei Tzedai. They don't agree with that. Now, interestingly, all the scrolls at all the Dead Sea Scrolls, none of them had any wood, any Eitz Chaim. They all were in one circle, and they had a strap at the end which wrapped around it to close it. Now, if they were not Sifrei Torah, so it could be they weren't required to have Eitz Chaim. If it was before they were Gozer Tumah on the Sefer, which means it was before the days of Beit Shammai, so then it could be they had no problem with it. But it also could be there was a Tzeduki organization which did not believe that Kisrei Kodesh Tamei Tzedakim. All told, there's only evidence of one Sefer Torah, and that was in cave number 4. Now if the Sefer Torah would have been found in one piece from beginning to the end, we would have known if it had an Eitz Chaim on it or not. But it wasn't found like that. It's fragmented. It's very hard. The tool was pieced together. So it's very hard to know if that thing carried an Eitz Chaim or not. Tzedukim Anad Moda the Kisrei Kodesh Tamei Tzedakim. Now, Rabbi Yochanan Mazakai says, don't we have this, only this against the Purushim? What about the fact that they say the bones of Chamar are Tahar and the bones of Yochanan Gadol are Tamei? What do the Tzedukim hold in regard to the bones of the Chamar? It's obviously they hold the bones of another matzalik, because it says so in the Torah. What do they hold about the bones of a chamar? So this is a whole discussion in the Mefarshim. But in reality, if you look at it, it's clearly what he's saying is that we have another taina on the Purushim. And Tzedukim don't have this issue, because the Tzedukim hold that the bones of a chamar are tameh, and therefore they have no problem. But the Purushim, we should have a problem with them. What's very interesting is that in this document, which is referred to as Miktat Masei Torah, it mentions straight, Va'afal oros va'atos ha'beim atzmeyam, ein la'asos min atzmoseyam, Yodos Caleb. Raffle, in other words, another taina that this guy has is as we mentioned before, the ashes, the paraduma, the Kohen Gadol has got to be more of Shemesh. And two, you're not allowed to use the bones or the skin or stuff like that from the tummy animal because it's tummy. So here we see that the Tzedukim indeed are metame the bones of a tummy animal and of an avela. So they didn't have that problem. But well, Rabbi Yechmozak was saying, if you're ready coming with a taina to the Purushim, you can go with them to another taina. Why they hold that the chamar, the bones of a chamar star, while the bones of a human are tummy. So again, clearly, we see this document shows us that this is a pshat in the Mishnah Yadayim. Again, the Mefarshim have a whole discussion. What is the opinion of the Tzedukim on the Atmos Chamar? But the document over here clearly shows that that they hold this tummy. Another thing, which he mentions over here in this document, let's go to the next Mishnah. Mishnah Zayin. Avim Tzedokim. Kov limon alechem purushim shetze metarim es anitzok. You are metar the nitzok. What is metar the nitzok? If a person takes a pot of something and he pours it in pot A, he pours it into pot B. Now, while he's pouring in it, it's really connected between pot A and pot B. Now, pot B is tameh and pot A isn't. So the question is, what happens to pot A? Does the tumah climb up and go... Does the tumma climb up and go all the way into pot A or not? So the Tzedokim is saying, we have a tiny bit that you have a tired the nitzok. You hold that the nitzok is tar, while it should really be tummy. What's interesting is that in this document of Mitzvah Masa Torah, which he mentioned before, he mentions Va'afa Mutzokas and Ravdilos ben Atom al Atar. He says, another problem we have with you guys is that the Mutzokos are not mounted to be in tummy tar. I mean, you'll take a tar pot and pour into tummy and not care about what happens with pot A, that is also becoming tummy. And we know that it's not like that. So in other words, this is clearly a Tzeduki. This is clearly a Tzeduki document. If this is clearly a Tzeduki document, as we've seen, we'll go on to Megillat HaMikdash, and we'll see that there are a lot of things, a lot of parallels between Megillat HaMikdash and this Mitzvah Maaseh Torah. One is clearly that the bones of a tummy animal are a tummy. And another interesting thing that is over here in this document is an iser to shecht she'en lizbocha se'en v'savlat v'yom echot. You're not allowed to shecht a pregnant animal. You're not allowed to shecht a pregnant animal. Why? Also, it's been out. You're not allowed to shecht a pregnant animal. We mentioned about the karaim, that the Rambam says the continuity, the Tzedukim, the karaim to this very day, one of their aseres hadibros, I don't mean literally, is you're not allowed to shecht a pregnant animal. Because it is also as been out. That also appears in the Megillat HaMikdash. Let's see if I can find it quickly. In Megillat HaMikdash, column 52, clearly, it says like this: Los is bachli shor v'sev ve'ez ve'hem ameleos kisor v'hem ali v'shor v'sev v'sor v'zmanam los izach b'yom echad. Now, you're not allowed to shecht a thing that's mole, meaning that's pregnant. So we have that, and in column 51. We have v'chol anosei matzmoso v'mavlaso or v'vaso v'tzibar v'chibitz v'gadav. In other words, the bones and tzeshev of the nevela are all tummy. So that fits with what we saw before with in Mitzvah Masei Torah, that the document of Megillat HaMikdash is a Tzeduki document. The truth of the matter is, Professor Lieberman and Yadin the whole time are pointing in that direction, but they were missing this missing link. In other words, he first didn't even realize that this is indeed a lot of Tzedukah material over here, but he didn't have that missing link, which is this document known as Mitzvat Maaseh Torah, to solve the problem. Another very interesting thing which we have in Megillat HaMikdash, but first of all, it ends off, the last column says a big iser on marrying a person is not allowed to marry his brother's daughter or his sister's daughter. Marrying a niece is a big prohibition. Now in the Torah, not only there's no prohibition, but the Chazal even recommended it. But the Karaim, to this very day, they come over to you and ask you a question, which I don't know if you'll have an answer. They say, hey, you're not allowed to marry your aunt, that's an issur d'oraisa, but you're allowed to marry your niece. Can you explain to me what the difference is? So that's one of the big things about the Karaim, the issur of marrying a niece. And that we see appears over here in the Tzeduki document also. So that was one. Another interesting thing is that we have in the Gemara Menachos, I don't have the daf in front of me right now, we have in the Gemara Menachos that from Aleph Benisan, Atul Ches Benisan, there was Yitoikam Tzmida, the Lola Mispah. There was a big fight between the Baitasim and the Purushim about the Korban Tzmid, and during those 8 days, they were able to prove to the Baitasim their point, and that was made an 8-day celebration. What was the issue? Shayu, the Baitasim used to say, Yochad Misnadev or maybe Tamid. An individual can come and donate the carbon tamid. Now, we know that the carbon tishmur lakali mamayadik. Chachamim told them, the Purushim said, wait, we have a pasuk tishmur lakali mamayadik that has got to come from, it's got to come from Trumas Alishka, meaning it's got to come from the money that the Machtas HaShekel has collected, and is brought all the way to, it's brought to Yerushalayim, and it represents all of, Klal Yisrael, and that's what's got to be, but an individual cannot bring the carbon tablet. And you say that an individual could bring. So, that's what the Gemara says. From the Gemara, it seems that the only issue was, can an individual bring a Korban Tzmid? But, as we'll see, it's much more complicated. In the Megillat HaMikdash, column 39, it says like this. Lo tavo ba'isha v'yelad ad sheyashem chok alumot. A woman or a young man cannot come into the Beis HaMikdash, and he brings v'nos and pidyon nafshel Hashem, Machtus HaShekel, Lezichon, Memosh Rozeim, Asim Ger HaShekel. He's got to bring his Machtus HaShekel, and then he can come to the Beis HaMikdash. Until then, he can't. Now, what do we have in the Torah? The Torah says, you give a Machtus HaShekel, V'akachas Kisav V'kipur Meis Meis Sol M'Satar Oshal Avodah Sol Mord. You take the Machtus HaShekel, and you give it. The Torah, we know that the Machtus HaShekel is given once a year. And what is it used for? It's used for the Korbanos Tzibur. But the Tzedukim, who only believe in Torah Shavach Tzav and not Torah Shavach Tzav, they look in the Torah, and the Torah never says you give it every year. It mentions you give it. So you give it once. So they held that you give the Machtus HaShekel only once. Now, where is the money going to come from the Korbanos Tzibur? The answer is, Yachad Misnadev, or maybe Tamid. Since an individual could bring it, you don't have to have Machtus HaShekel. In other words, the debate was not just, can a Yachad bring the Tamid, but the debate was, do we really need to bring Machtus HaShekel or not? So this is clearly a Tzeduki document where it mentions that the Yachid, it mentions that there is no Chiyuv of Machtus HaShekel, which was the Tzeduki opinion, and the Korbanos can be brought, by an individual, and there's no need for Machtus HaShekel. Another very interesting thing, which we have over here in the end of Megillat HaMikdash, as I told you, it's a lot of repeat from Chumash Devarim, and in the repeat of Parshas Kisetze, it talks about the mitzvah of making a makeh, of making a roof, of making a fence around the roof, and it's almost the same as what it says in the Torah. Kisiv nebayas chodash v'sisa ma'akeh negago v'lososum dam b'vesecho ki yipol anofo mimenu. It's almost perfectly exactly what it says in the Torah, except one word. In the Torah by us, it says v'sisa ma'akeh legagecho. You should make a fence for your roof. And here it says v'sisa ma'akeh legago. You should make a fence for its roof. What's the difference between the two? It seems to be not very significant, but the truth of the matter is it could be very significant. In the Gemara in Chulin, and we have this on the Hebrew source page 10-2, Kuf Lamed Vav, the Gemara learns out a special din from the Gagecho. Ela Gagecho Mayato. What does the word Gagecho come to exclude? Your roof, Mashma, not something else. So the Gemara says the Mute, but the Kinesis, but the Medrashos. That a shul, a base Kinesis, base Medrash, which does not belong to an individual, does not require a Make. Now let me tell you something. If you go to Ramle with a Karoy Mar, and you ask the guy if you need a Makkah for your roof, the guy look at you like you're crazy. Why? If you need a Makkah for the roof of the shul, why? From the roof of the shul, no one can fall? No one's going to fall just because it's a shul? What kind of nonsense is this? Of course you need. So in other words, again, the Karoyim again, which are continuity of Tzedukim. So here, the guy changes the Nusach. Instead of Gagecha, becomes Gago. In other words, don't get any wrong ideas. And Midrash Gagecha, and not but the Kinesis, but the Midrashos. The Gago, it means, you know, it's roof, and the Melech includes all. So, again, we see over here again, that this document is a Tzedukim document. I'll finish off with something very interesting, and see the Gaonis of the Chasam Sefer. In Rus, in the beginning of Rus, you have when Naomi is trying to dissuade Rus from following. So she says, So Chazal say that this was the conditions for a person, for her to become a Giyara, she had to accept Mitzvahs Mitzvahs. And what is she said, Vashar Tamusi Amus, she told that we have different Mitzvahs Besdin, says Vashar Tamusi Amus. The Targum lists the Mitzvahs Besdin, and one of the Mitzvahs Besdin that he has over there is Tzlivas Kesa, is to hang a person, to impale him on, that's the Mitzvahs Besdin. And now, we don't have a Mitzvahs Besdin by hanging. We have the Torah that says that you hang a person. The Torah says hang a person. The Torah says, V'chiyah b'ish chayit mishpat mavas v'humos, v'salis ha-salis. If the person has a chayit mishpat mavas, and you killed him, then you hang him on the tree. So, Chazal, the Gemara Sanhedrin learns that it's talking about, after you killed the guy, then you hang him on the tree. Now, one of the biggest points of contention between the Tzedukim and the Purushim was all the issue of Mitzvahs Besdin. Because a lot of times in the Torah it doesn't say which Mitzvahs Besdin you give. It says Mois Yumas, or the Mayim Bum. So if you learn Gzeres Shavah, fine. But if you don't learn Gzeres Shavah, so then you have a problem. We know that one of the things that Shimon Meshach did when he wanted to clear the Sanhedrin from the Tzedukim was anytime he came to give Mitzvahs Besdin, he used to challenge him. How do you know you give this Misa? Maybe it's that Misa. So a person give us times. So the Chasam Sofer was asked about this Targum. The Targum says, Tzlivas Kesa, you kill by impaling. So, the Chasam Sofer was asked, since when do we kill by impaling? We don't have killing by hanging. Any hanging in those days was not like today, with a rope around the neck, but it was done by impaling. So how do you have over here with the Targum list killing by impaling, but we don't have such a thing? So the Chasam Sofer came to this unbelievable conclusion, and he said that the Targum on Rus is a Tzeduki Targum. And a bunch of other riots. That is the Tzeduki Targum. So what's very fascinating is in that Megillat HaMikdash, when it comes to these psukim of a Salisa Salait, so it gives a whole list of a person who is guilty and gets his Misa. But what does it say? Ki Yeb Yishchet Mishpat Moves. He runs away to the Goyim and he curses Yisrael. You hang him on the tree and he shall die. Meaning that which we have in the Torah of Ahumas. So first you kill him and then you hang the dead body on the tree. It switches it around. No, you hang him on the tree and then he dies. So in other words, the Tzedukim hold from this pasuk that there is a form of death by hanging, by impaling someone. The Chasam Sofer was right with his idea that the Targum on Rus is Taka Targum of Tzedukim. And we see that that's Taka Tzeduki idea. So, there's a lot more to discuss about the Dead Sea Scrolls as a whole, and the research is just beginning now that all the stuff has been published. But again, we can see from what we know from Chazal, again, there's a lot of, as I said, the what we have today, we didn't talk about the tefillin, the get, which is found from Masada, which is the same get that we have today, we should know from, but all the stuff there's plenty to discuss about. A lot of Yiddishkeit, which has got to be drawn out from these things. But when we see Chazal talk about negative, about Sifrei Tzedukim, that's Ram Chitzani, or whatever, these are exactly the things that were found. It shouldn't surprise anyone they're found. They obviously exist in those days, and that's why Chachamim had to ban them and say that they're also to read.